This is Ken Lubin, the host and founder of the Executive Athletes Podcast, and welcome to this week's episode. I want to thank everyone that's been listening, and thank you for the comments and feedback. They're awesome and an incredible help in this journey to making this podcast better and better each episode. Once again, this is unscripted and unedited, as I believe it is the best way to get to really know the guest.
All right. 3, 2, 1, go. Today's guest is Mike Nagel. Mike is a med device veteran who brings more than 30 years of sales and marketing experience in the medical device industry. Currently, he serves as president and CEO of Vomaris Innovations. But I was trying to talk to Mike and try to find out a little bit about his bio, but found an article from the Voyage Phoenix, which is a paper in the town that Mike is, that probably outlines his bio the best. So I'm just going to read it from that. So outside of work, Mike found a passion for endurance athletics. He completed 7 Ironman triathlons, I think it's more now, 12 marathons, and his first ultra 50 miler. He finds that training for endurance sports is similar to business, and that you start with the end in mind, but perhaps the most critical elements are the incremental steps you must take on a daily basis to get to that end goal. In a sense, you get used to being comfortable, being uncomfortable, which builds your resilience. And we'll talk about resilience, especially in today's world. And it says, I find this helps me in business to not be overwhelmed with the sometimes perceived enormity of various tasks. I know I just need to get things done one step at a time. And I think that's the perfect philosophy of being an athlete. So Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you for asking me to be on. It's a pleasure.
So talk to us a bit about that philosophy and the athlete mindset and everything else, but how that intertwines into your day job. But first, love to hear who Mike is from his own words.
Well, thanks a lot. I think you described it pretty well from the article, but I've been in the emerging growth company business for a while. This is my fourth kind of what we'd call startup or emerging growth medical device company. And what I find challenging is that when you come in an emerging growth medical device company, usually you're being tasked or you have an idea, a concept of something that's never been done before. So there's a lot of times there's no processes, there's no rules. There are various constraints, and you're really kind of hiring a team and working with people that, I essentially sometimes tell my people, they're asking us to go to the moon for the first time because no one else has done that. So I find that invigorating in a lot of ways, and a lot of ways it's kind of scary as well. But that's, I think, a little bit about me. And like you said, I've been involved in endurance athlete for, probably a better part of 20 years. So, as business and passion and things like that often become intertwined in kind of who we are and how we approach things.
No, and I think that's such an important piece, right, is understanding the endurance, and especially with what we're going through right now. And yeah, a lot of people, we live in such a world of instant gratification that if it's not done this quarter, it's terrible. And it's just the opposite. It's, if you look at an Ironman, you look at a marathon, even you look at a 5K, there's going to be points where you're hurting and suffering, and this is the worst thing possible, to then be in euphoric. And that's really what life is, and that's what business is, and that's what everything is. You're not going to be, stock market's not going to be going up the entire time. You're not going to be profitable the entire time. You just have to realize that this is a step in the process, and you almost need to step back to learn how to get better.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as I got into endurance athletic, one time I was talking to a pro triathlete that did Ironman, and they make everything look so effortless when they're out on the course, and their times reflect that. And he one time said to me, he said, I usually want to quit an Ironman about 1,000 times when I'm out there. And that's the same, whether you're a top level triathlete or whether you're just a back of the pack or trying to get it done. And it's the same in business, right? I mean, there are times when the projects or the obstacles seem so insurmountable that really, if there's a way out, you probably would quit, but you can't, right? So you want to finish it. So I think that's really important, like you mentioned, of the resiliency of just, things aren't going to always go your way. In fact, I reflected on that last week when we talked about when you approach a long endurance race, it's just like any day or any business is, it will never go as you plan your day will go. It's just too long a day. There's too many things that are going to happen. And so it's how you deal with them in the moment. And just like running a business, no different of any successful executive, how you deal with those things that get thrown your way.
Well, and that's it, right? And I think that's actually a differentiating factor from those who are successful than who they're not. They understand that you get paid to solve problems, right? You don't get paid to just for it to be easy. Yeah. If it was easy, everyone would do it. And it's the same thing with endurance sports. If it was easy to be fit and eat perfectly and, you know, everyone would do it, but it's not easy, right? It sucks to go out and train in the rain. It sucks to go out and, you know, when it's windy or snowing or any of that stuff. And business is the same when you have to go solve that problem.
Yeah. No, or as you say, is you're thinking about Boston right now. Think about Phoenix when it's 150.
Right. Yep.
But I think a lot of times too is, you know, we look at challenges different ways. And I've kind of learned over the years is about, you know, when you don't want to train, particularly you don't want to do something or it's hot out and or you're end of your ride and it's hot, you know, or just how you approach something is instead of I have to go out and do this, you look at it as I have the opportunity mm-hmm. to go out and do this. I'm healthy enough, I'm fit enough, or I have this opportunity here at work. So I have the opportunity to try to take advantage of something. And it kind of changes the mindset a little bit from, you know, feeling fatigued that you have to do something or you're obligated to do something, where as take it as being grateful that you are actually being given that shot at the plate to make it happen.
Right. I get to do something versus I have to do something. It's right. Two totally different. No one's holding a gun to your head to go race Ironman, right? You get right. to do it. It's yeah. a journey you take on your own or a multi-day race or any of that stuff. And
yeah,
that's what, you know, people think that it's, you know, that it is a lot of work. It is a lot of work, but I think too, the journey of it is, excuse me, just as important as getting to the start line. And that's when I coach athletes, when I talk to people too, it's getting to the start line is the party, right? That's when it's about ready to have fun is like, all right, we're here. We made it. The hard stuff's done.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually I just usually think about race day is when you, when you start, you're like, the best thing is if I get through this, I'm going to get like a week off.
Yep.
So I'm done. But you're right about, you know, when I think back of other startups I've done, is that struggle in the process is what you kind of figured out that you enjoy along the lines. It's really the part of the process where you learn and grow and become uncomfortable, but it's the process that you have to enjoy to get there.
I loved one thing you said earlier, sort of in the intro, talking about being a startup guy, right? And you're being asked to go to the moon for the first time. Talk to us a bit about that in business and in sport, because a lot of that stuff is being outside of your comfort zone. But let's shift gears more to the business side a little bit and talk to us a bit about, you know, that process of it's like going to the moon with, you know, and developing your own rocket ship and without a route to get there.
Yeah. I think, you know, you know, just this year, you know, in March and April, when the pandemic was breaking out, we had an opportunity with our own product where we rapidly got some testing and found out that we had antiviral capabilities for PPE. So we switched gears and we're coming up with some pretty innovative things for the next generation of PPE. So I think, you know, about that, about changing course and just sticking with it is that you're doing something for the first time. So you're trying to develop those processes along the way. And, you know, I call it the three P's, people, process, and product. And you kind of try to simplify things along those lines to really stay completely focused on what you're trying to do. But at the same time is you've got to be able to innovate, because some of the things that you're doing, there may be no answers for. So for instance, right now, you know, when you're looking at the FDA standard for some particular test, well, if your technology is different, you've got to be able to adapt something to the standard that the agency will accept, but yet you've got to be able to innovate because your technology has never been standardized before. So you have to look at that as a challenge. And I think that's definitely people that enjoy startups don't mind ambiguity. And I think when I talk to people that want to come work here or work on projects, I usually say, you know, to try to get into them that you will work in great uncertainty and great ambiguity. And you have to be able to try to create some certainty around ambiguity. And I think that that's key for a startup. And then how are you going to de-risk your project every day you go along? And so that's a little bit, I think, about any startup guy. I'm no different than anybody else that takes this on. But I definitely think where, you know, if you've spent your life in big companies, you're just trying to make processes better. And when you come to an emerging growth company or startup, you're trying to create a process all along the way, and you're trying to innovate as well. So it's a bit of a different mindset for sure.
And so talk to us a little bit about too, is being the CEO, or you're a startup guy, you're in the med device world, and it's not like you can just go to bring a product to market and say, hey, we're here. You have a lot of work to do once you get a product to actually get it to the market. And many listeners know my wife's in that business. We chatted about that, and she runs the clinical trials. And you know, there's so many bumps in the roads that can be there. And in addition to just doing what you're doing, you have a whole other job in between that and then training to be an Ironman, right? So, and that's sort of going to segue into my next question. Talk to us a bit about being a CEO and training and dealing with all this different adversity, right? Because you're getting stuff thrown at you from angles that no one else would ever know.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the mantra around here, and I think in endurance racing too, it's find a way to win. And a lot of times there is no pre-described way to win, but you've got to find a way to win. So you nail it right on the head. Med device, there are no shortcuts in terms of the materials testing, the validation of your technology, the safety, the efficacy, all those things you have to go through. So you have to have a very long-term focus on things of doing the right thing. But you're always like anybody else looking at how do I compress that timeline, and how do I de-risk the project. And, you know, as far as the training, the aspect, I mean, I think everybody has their threshold. I mean, like I said, I'm not a competitive Ironman athlete at the top levels, but, you know, my training usually is done between, you know, 4:30 in the morning to 7:00. And then on the weekends, you know, Saturdays and Sundays are spent riding or running or swimming or whatever. So I have those times. So I find it to be manageable to fit in, with the exception of, I have to get it done in the morning, or it usually is not going to get done. I mean, I'll get interrupted for a lunch meeting, so I can't do swims at noon, or, you know, running in the evening might be hard, you know, whatever, but you can jump on your trainer. But I've got to get mine going in the morning, but that helps me because it makes you feel good. You wake up, it's a stress reducer for sure. You accomplish something early by the time you get to work, and you kind of start your day in a good mindset, which I think is helpful in this type of environment.
Yeah, and you're way ahead of that, right? And most people are that get up and early and train, or they figure out what works best for them,
right?
Because some people, there's, you know, I think the crazy people are the people who train at night. I like that's a whole different ball game.
Yeah, I know guys that do it. They prefer to get home at work and train in the evening, and that works for them. So I just find that the morning routine works for me. So right. Best.
And talk to, you know, we're talking a little bit, you know, you're in Phoenix now, right? And dealing with the heat. How is it training in the heat? That's one thing, believe me, we get hot and humid here in New England, but it's for a day or two at the time. How do you adjust your training? Probably, you know, obviously the morning makes a difference, but when you're doing it on the weekends.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And, you know, my wife and I spent a decade in Southern California where the weather was always perfect. You could train any day and any time, right? So we came over here, and one of the things that I took it on as a challenge is that I always fretted about races as I was approaching race day, if it was going to be really hot. You know, you think about it too much, you worry about it too much. And so I looked at it as a challenge that, you know what, I'm going to come over here and I'm going to train in the summer, and I'm going to get better at adjusting and modifying to the heat. So through the help of a coach, you know, I'm able now to, you know, obviously start my, say, a bike ride early, but, you know, I found out better ways to hydrate and with nutrition. And I think of having two summers here, I don't know if I would ever fret a race if I saw the conditions were going to be hot, because now I have that confidence that I can operate in a pretty hot environment. I know how to hydrate. I know how to do my nutrition, and I use this kind of a challenge, but to answer your question is in the summertime here, you know, that bike ride better be, if you have a long bike ride, it better be starting at 4:30 or 5 and you're off your bike by 10 o'clock, right? So, because it's going to be pretty hot.
Right. No, and that's a whole different, you know, that's a whole different, you know, beast of dealing with the cold and in New England and dealing with yeah. different parts of the country. But it's all good for everyone because it creates that diversity. It's yeah. Yeah, I always feel for the people that are training for Boston and it's in April and you live yeah. in New England. These, you know, they're training in snow and rain and right. everything else, and it's yeah. it's pretty rugged.
And I, you know, I grew up, you know, and lived in Minnesota till I was,
so you know,
till about 15 years ago. And, you know, I remember doing 5 or 6 hour bike rides in freezing rain. That's just what you had to do, right? So yep. I played hockey growing up. So I got that cold thing down.
I'm right there with you. My perfect race is like 40 degrees and pouring rain because I'm bigger than most.
Yeah.
And no one, all these skinny guys just fold because yeah. they're frozen to the bone. And it's like, dude, you know, go have an extra couple of beers and you'll be like me and you'll be ready to go.
And, you know, the other thing we learn, you know, with endurance sports or anything is that, you know, it's an outside sport. So you have to be prepared for whatever the weather gives you on race day, just like business. I mean, you know, bad days, good days, sunny days, rain, I mean, you got to show up and be ready for the day's activities. Right. And so, or we deal with executives, everybody does. Meetings, right? You have to roll with all of it. I look back, my very first Ironman was back in Lake Placid in 2003, and I'll never forget it because your first Ironman, I got in the water and I looked up at the flags and they were just straight wind day, and it rained from the start of the race till probably almost all through the entire race. It was pouring rain, and you know, you just kind of get through it and don't really think a lot about the conditions. You just worry about executing your plan. And that's what I think we have to do as executives, is that, you know, there's a lot of things that can trip you up, but you got to get in your little bubble or your little company and you got to execute on your plan and keep your people focused on executing on the plan.
No, and how many people, right? They're training for that perfect day. And believe me, Lake Placid never has a perfect day. Even if it is a perfect day, something else is going to happen. And
that's right. Yeah.
You know, and that's where the resiliency piece comes in. And that's one of the things you were talking about in your article. Talk to us a bit about the resiliency piece, being a leader, being an athlete through this whole COVID thing. How are you dealing with that?
You know, it's been challenging, I think, in a lot of different levels. I think, you know, resilience, I think, is something that's critical. And I was very fortunate, you know, growing up, I had really outstanding parents, and they really, I think, instilled in all of us. I grew up in a house of three other brothers, so four boys. And I think that the resilience piece was something I think my parents, you know, really instilled in us. You know, you get cut from a team, you work harder to make it next year. You know, get put on the bench, you work harder to get back on, or to deal with setbacks, to learn to deal with setbacks, I think is critical. So then you kind of get in past the college world and get in the work world. And I think that the resilience piece is just kind of built in. And I think that that's really important when you're working in this kind of environment, because I mean, literally you'll fail 1,000 times and you just got to be able to know that that's going to help you get to your yes. And I think too, I think it's the biggest thing, you know, we do a personality test as one of the hiring tools. And one of the things I look at in a personality dynamics of somebody is I want to look at their resilience. And see how resilient they are, because if you're not, it's pretty easy to get beaten down in a startup, because there's just, it's trial and error. And unfortunately, medical device is built on trial and error, as everything else is. And you just have to be really stick-to-itiveness and be able to get to the finish line or whatever that process is in a way that you can be effective. So I think a lot of it, you know, the best thing we can do as parents is build resilience into our children, because it's good. They're going to fail. And you have to let them fail. I mean, I think that's what our parents did. They let us fail.
Right. And I think, and that's more important now than ever, right? Because like we were chatting earlier, the world of instant gratification, or the fact that someone's going to take care of this, or there's an app that can deal with it right now, versus you know, in our generation, it was probably getting credit cards, right? We're like, oh, instant gratification. Now I've got money. And well, yep. you really don't have any money. You're just going backwards.
Yeah, but, that's right. Great point. Yeah.
Right. And that was our instant gratification back then. And now it's a completely different way. But this I also think this whole COVID thing too is actually creating resilience in a lot of people that they didn't even know they had it. Right. And even though that they think they're getting beaten up, they're still alive today.
Yeah.
You know, versus, and so.
No, I think so. I think you bring up a good point to answer your question more thoroughly, but the COVID, you know, you've got shelter in place. So people aren't together. You've got to really, really communicate with people. And, you know, some people do well working in a remote. Some people don't. You've got to recognize it. And you got to kind of embrace it and find out what you need to do to kind of make sure that you're connecting with that employee or that they're engaged somehow. And that's the biggest thing. But I think as a leader, I mean, in anything, it's so critical for that leader to maintain a calm presence. And that's one thing I get from my board of directors. I'll tell you, no matter how rocky the boat has been, you know, they don't get sick at sea, so to speak. They've weathered so many storms themselves in their business that, you know, almost sometimes when I feel panicky about a situation, they're as calm as ever. And I think they show me that calming effect so then I can pass it on to my team and maintain a semblance of calm and a methodical plan. And here's how we're going to get through it. And, you know, I think that's what people are looking for. And then they can use you as an example. And I think that's really important for employees. I mean, I've got employee base here, just like probably you do. I've got my youngest employee might here be 24 years old, a couple years out of college and all the way up, you know, into their 50s. So people have different levels of experience and resilience that, you know, will manifest themselves in these kind of situations.
No, exactly. And that's what's interesting, right? Yeah. I'm almost for the young kids coming out of school, it's actually probably better that they're coming into this versus the people that are 10 years out of school who've never seen it, right?
You're right.
It's a totally different ballgame.
Yep, exactly. You know, your business, you get a lot of rejection before you get that to the yeses.
Oh, that's exactly what it is, right? It's that resiliency. It's keeping moving forward. And a lot of things in triathlon and running races, cycling races, endurance races, when you get into that dark state sometimes too, it's just remember one foot in front of the other.
Right.
And it's amazing. What is it? What do they say? The journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step, but it's so true. It's one foot in front of the other and keep going. And then if you chunk it down to the next telephone pole, all right, I'm going to make it to the next telephone pole, or I'm going to make it to the next mile marker sign or whatever it is. And it's true.
Yeah, no, you bring a great point. I had somebody once tell me relentless forward progress. It's all that counts that you're moving.
Right.
And you're right. I mean, I think, you know, going back to that resilience piece is that I think that's what probably as leaders we can do the most for our employees because, you know, that don't have the experience that can become overwhelmed with a project and to be able to break it down in smaller steps as much as like, hey, what do I have to do today to be able to set myself up for tomorrow? That's all I got to do is worry about today. Why don't we make a list of today? You tell me what you got to do today and let's get at it. And I think breaking it down even to that simple of a fashion for a lot of people helps reduce the anxiety of what has to happen.
And it's just showing up half the time too, right? If you're in college, I tell my kids or anyone in college, you just show up for class, you're going to get a C or a B. You just show up. And that's because once you get there, you're going to figure out what you need to do. If you don't show up, game over.
I had a medical device. My first medical device sales manager told me the three ups of medical device sales: get up, show up, and follow up. That's it,
right? And it's so true, right? And that's all you got to do. And it's not rocket science, but it's showing up. It's showing up to the gym. It's showing up to the you know, to your bike or your next training session. One of the things I do when I'm doing a hard workout, like CrossFit workout, is really, you know, is just step up to the bar. And once you step up to the bar, it's a lot easier to pick it up versus being 5 feet away, hunched over, looking at the bar, right? So
exactly.
Take that step up to the bar and see what happens.
Get ready. Yep, exactly.
So talk to us a bit about, you know, nutrition. Do you follow any specific nutrition plan? Are you just sort of listen to your body and do what you need to do? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I try to keep it simple, right? I mean, I attempt to eat as healthy as possible. And, you know, we all kind of know by now what's good, what's not good. You know, I don't try to overcomplicate it. I'm not a picky eater. I don't get, you know, kind of over the top when I do eat and all that. So, I mean, as far as a lot of endurance athletes, I'm a, you know, probably not a, not an overly crazy eater and all that. So I just try to keep it really simple. Whole foods. We all by now know that what's good and not good. Right. Mm-hmm. And then I think that through my coach, like while I'm riding or running, I think he's helped me make some better choices, maybe of things that settle into your stomach easier or things you want to mix and match and all that. But I try not to overcomplicate it. Simple.
Yeah. No, and I'm the same way. There's some people I talk to that are, you know, one way or the other of keto or vegan or, you know, sort of whatever.
All good stuff. I mean,
it's all good stuff. Yeah, exactly. It's just different. I don't know if, you know, you followed one or the other, because I'm always fascinated to see how that, you know, how that works, right? With people's results.
Yeah, exactly. Nope. It's all try to keep it simple. Simple is, simple does.
Yeah. No, because everyone's engines run so differently, right? Some run better. I've got a guy that I adventure race with who is like, you know, he was thin to begin with. And then he's like, he went full keto and his like VO2 max numbers have like gone through the roof. I'm like,
really?
My God, you know, it's crazy. If I did that, I'd be asleep on the ground by like day four because, you know, of that type of stuff.
Maybe you could be going keto. I don't know.
I don't know if he still is. I know he was, but but still it's, you know, some of that stuff. And it's really fascinating to me to find out because different body types are so different with everything else there, you know, that happens.
Yeah,
but what you know, we're coming up here to the end, but what races do you have plans? We're chatting a little earlier. It sounds like you had a few things on the docket.
Yeah. I mean, my A race that I hope happens is November 22nd. I'm signed up for the full Ironman here in Arizona. I'll be racing with the Executive Challenge athletes, which I've done and really enjoyed a great group of people. In fact, that's how I think you and I got hooked up through Ironman Executive Athletes and then your group.
Right.
So I've got that, and you know, I'm hoping to run a half marathon this weekend up in Northern Arizona, just as like a little break in the action. But those are my two big, my big races, Ironman Arizona. So we've got, you know, from now until November 22nd to see if there's a race and then be ready for race day. And then into next year, not having even thought about it yet, because I'd like to see how many races are going to put on. I'm hopeful that the race schedule kind of comes back and people can get back to normal exercise and normal racing.
No, I know. Normal racing would be nice. That was, you know, last year I built a house and was like, oh, I'll get right back into it next year, and next year happened. So that was the end of that.
And when is your next adventure race, Ken?
You know, I was getting talked into doing one this weekend.
Was there alcohol involved?
What's that?
Was there alcohol involved?
No, probably. But no, I'm not doing that. So probably, you know, now in April, there's a race I do every year in April in the Mount Washington Valley called the Inferno.
Okay.
My kids end up all winter long, you know, we'll start going into winter and they ski race. So those weekends start in a month and then it's full on with those guys. But the way I try to do it is, you know, I try to train. I train 6 days a week, no matter what, whatever I come down to. And it's, again, a lot like you, it's finding when you have time to do stuff. I travel a lot. My oldest daughter, their ski race. And when they're inspecting the course, I know I've got a couple hours. So I'll go for a run.
Yeah.
And I know. She doesn't need me and they're gone. And, right. You know, believe me, I love sitting chatting and having coffee with people, but you know, I'm like, I've got 2 hours now. I can go do this.
Run. Yeah. It's a great, I mean, really, once you get adapted, you really can be innovative and work out almost anywhere. Doing anything. It doesn't have to be any particular you know, agenda.
And now the world of like athleisure clothes, you can wear whatever you want and then you can go for a run in it and no one knows what you did.
Exactly. Go to work.
Yeah, go to work, right? Yeah. It's I've probably got more Lululemon stuff than most females do because of that, right? It works out and works out really well for me. So that's, you know, that's how I pull a lot of that stuff off. So, it's, you know, and a lot of times too, I love to train, right? I think I like to train more than I like to race because I can train on my own time. I'm sort of in my own program. I can get up early. If I want to go for a 4-hour ride, I leave by 6, I'm home by 10, right? And, you know, and that type of stuff. Where if I go race, and I think that's ended up from burnout from years of just doing it every weekend from, because I would go from bike racing to ski racing for years and years. And I love the fact that, all right, you know, I'm home by 10, I can have breakfast, and now, hey, we can do yard work or whatever we need to do.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly. So awesome. But where can people find you? Where can they find out more about you and what you're up to?
Boy, I mean, for company wise, go to www.vomaris.com. Email mike.nagel@vomaris.com. My cell phone number is on my LinkedIn. Anybody out there that's an endurance athlete or coming through Phoenix, need a workout or whatever, give me a call. I'll be glad to you know, meet everybody.
Perfect. Perfect. No, and thanks, Mike. This was awesome. You've done, you know, you're doing amazing things. Keep up the good work. And hopefully, you know, this is, we're around the corner, but who knows? You know, now I feel like once, you know, once more people started coming out with this, that more and more people are having it. So I don't know what's up.
Yeah, no, it is tough to know. Or, you know, we'll just have to learn how to adapt and to manage and live with this until it really does go down. But I have a feeling we're going to have to manage it for a while here. That, you know, I'm getting on a plane tomorrow, and so I'm still traveling, not as much as I was, but you know, we'll deal with it.
Exactly. So awesome. Again, it was a pleasure. It was an honor to have you. If anyone has any questions, comments, or feedback, feel free to email me at kenandtheexecutiveathletes.com. But keep out there, keep on keeping on, crushing it, have some fun, enjoy the show, and have a great weekend, everyone. Thanks.